Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of Serious Issues is brought to you by the good people over at Movement Watches. Archie, do you have a watch?
Yeah. No.
No. Would you like a watch?
Yes.
Well, do you know that if you go to movement.com/serious issues, you can get 15% off with free shipping and free returns, a very brand new and special Movement watch. Do you want to... Yeah. Do you want a watch for Christmas?
Yes.
How about just 15% of a watch?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Do you know what maths is yet?
No.
No.
Yes.
You do? Oh, good. Okay, great. Well, anyway, if you're listening right now and you want a good deal and a good watch, go to movement.com/serious issues and pick yourself up a watch. Hey, everybody. This is Levins. Just letting you know that this episode was recorded a little bit differently than usual. My kids are at home sick. Tilly is sick. Tilly, are you sick? You feeling good? Archie, how about you? You feeling good?
No.
Yes. Oh, good. That's good. So I had to record.
Yes.
I had to record this episode with Siobhan over Skype, and her phone, much like my microphone, is picking up the background music. My micro noise at my house right now. Her phone was picking up the background noise at her house. And you can hear her, like, you know, patting her baby's bottom to go to sleep. You can hear cars in the background. At one point you can hear Nate cooking a steak. You can still totally hear her very clearly, probably more clearly than you can hear me right now. But I just thought, if anyone was wondering what those weird noises in the episode are, that's what they are. Anyway, on with the episode. Thank you so much for listening. Hey, if anyone's a babysitter, get in touch so I can record this podcast.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? And welcome to another incredible episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast coming to you live out of Sydney. Usually we record at King's Comics in Sydney, which is 310 Pitt Street, where we get all the books that we review every single week. But this week we're doing it from the privacy of our own homes.
Nice.
Over Skype, because children get sick.
Turns out.
Which is a very it's a reoccurring segment on this podcast now. but anyway, my name is Andrew Levins.
My name is Siobhan Coombs.
And every week we review all of the new books that came out last week. We kick off every single episode by reviewing number ones, which we'll do in a minute. We're also going to be reviewing the second finale of Secret Empire. We're going to be saying farewell to one of our favorite underrated series. And welcoming back some characters that we haven't seen in a while. It's going to be a fun show. If you like fun shows, you should definitely check your feed, because immediately after uploading this episode, I'm going to upload our special Q&A episode that we recorded last week. It was a Patreon exclusive, and now it's going to go up for everyone to listen to. So if you want to hear Siobhan and I answer a bunch of very funny questions submitted by all of our listeners, there's like I think we did, like, we probably answered more questions than we do review books each week, and we normally review about 50 books each week, so you can, it's a fun and long show. and if you want us to do more things like that, please support us on Patreon at patreon.com/serious issues podcast. Siobhan, this episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast, the name of this goddamn show, is brought to you by two of our very, very cool and handsome listeners. And they are Aidan Lentz.
Oh, he is handsome.
Is he really?
I don't know. I assume.
with a name like Lentz.
Yeah, you got it with him.
And someone who I can absolutely attest to the handsomeness of. I've met him in person. Reynaldo Guzmundo. Gizmundo.
He is handsome.
We have a penchant. He is very handsome. I hope the fact that I may have fucked your last name up is negated by the fact that I said you were handsome.
Yeah.
If you want to really, really thank Reynaldo for supporting us on Patreon and helping this episode become possible, the best thing you can do is actually go and find his podcast, which is called Into the Night, and it's all about Moon Knight. He hosts the podcast with another listener of Serious Issues. He's a lot more than just a listener of this podcast. Like, I'm sure he does other things.
Yeah.
But Connor, who is someone that I'm sure we'll be thanking in future weeks. But thank you so much to those great listeners. If you want to become a listener who we in turn thank in the future, Serious Issues is on Patreon. Look us up and help support. Now, on with the show, Siobhan. Let's kick things off. We've got a massive week. I struggled to read all the books.
I didn't. I powered through everything.
That's amazing.
I have a lot of free time, apparently.
You're housebound.
yeah, that's more like it.
So it's not really the first of a series, but it is the finale of a series, and because it's Marvel, they slapped a fucking number one on it. Should we review Secret Empire Omega number one as our first book of the week in First Things First?
Absolutely.
So this is written by Nick Spencer with art by Andrea Sorrentino, who was probably like the strongest thing about this entire series. All the issues that he did the art on, I thought were the best. And I think the series as a whole would have been better if he just did the entire thing, personally.
I agree.
We've also got art on this one by Joe Bennett. This is the thing that Marvel do after each event is they have a long conversation between two characters who had a fight at some point in the event. And, you know, if you've loved Iron Man talking to dead Captain America, or if you've loved Captain America talking to dead Iron Man, how about Captain America talking to evil Captain America?
Compelling. Tell me more.
This was a strange issue that I guess is kind of like to set up what happens next in the Marvel Universe. And all I kind of got from this was that, like, now people don't trust Captain America?
Yeah, except they kind of do because they saw him punching other Captain America and nothing's actually changed.
I don't find that a very compelling future for Captain America. Especially, like, if that's what Mark Waid and Chris Samnee are going to have to deal with in their run because they're taking over the book next. Like, I like those to create as best when they're doing, like, a really fun adventure kind of book. But if it's, like, the world doesn't trust Captain America, I don't know. I don't really want that.
I feel like a more fun angle, like, I could imagine Mark Waid and Chris Samnee doing a great job of there's a clone evil Captain America going around. That could be kind of fun.
I mean, didn't we just have that? Wasn't that... That's literally just described what Secret Empire
was.
No,
but now there's two.
Oh, right, there's two.
There's two at one time.
Well, yeah, I guarantee you that will be a part of Captain America's story at some point very soon.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I kind of like that. I don't know why now it suddenly appeals to me. I was like, that's pretty funny that there's just two Captain Americas. Evil Captain America on his own, no thank you. Two Captain Americas, yes please.
A yin and a yang at Captain America.
Yes.
On board. What do you think of Secret Empire as a whole?
I think it was alright. I'm sure like I was more harsh about single issues at the time. But I think as a whole, I quite enjoyed it. I think that Nick Spencer was, like, trying to actively say something, and it was, like, a pretty interesting concept for Marvel Comics at this point in time.
I wish
it had a consistent art direction. I wish that Sorrentino had done the whole thing, because
that's,
I think, his stuff is so strong from a design standpoint that it really would have made it exceptional. But, you know, it was okay. Pretty good.
I don't really think it's a great way to critique something by comparing it to other things. Like, you know, like by saying, well, it wasn't as bad as this. But I think, you know, when it comes to Marvel,
it was definitely
better
than Civil War 2.
That's right. And a step in the right direction, I guess. It told a full story.
Yeah.
And it didn't just exist to set up a bunch of future stuff. Like, you know, yep. On one hand, you can be disappointed that, you know, that this issue in particular didn't really, like, tease much exciting stuff of what's to come.
Yeah.
But, at least it told a full story that you can just end now and that's it. You could essentially never read a Marvel comic again and have no burning questions unanswered.
I mean, you could say that. I thought you were going to say and have no, like, ill effects to your life. And I was like, you can say that about pretty much every single comic ever.
So Marvel said goodbye to one beloved franchise. Actually, not really beloved. They said goodbye to one thing. as they did that, they said hello to something else. They said welcome back to something else. And that is Runaways.
Oh, yeah.
The Brian K. Vaughan series from, God, it must have been over a decade ago.
Yeah.
That introduced the concept of a bunch of teenagers whose parents were supervillains, but one of them was like a mutant, one of them was an alien, one of them had like access to dark magic, one of them had access to tech.
One of them had access to a dinosaur.
That's right, of course.
The best one.
And actually, that was one of the first Marvel series I ever read in full, I think.
Yeah, same. Runaways is one of those rare Marvel runs that you can kind of recommend without having to know a huge amount of Marvel history. Like, it just kind of works as a concept, and then Wolverine shows up.
Yeah,
hilarious.
Totally. Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's reasonably standalone. At least the Brian
So this week, so... Yeah, the Brian Kevin one, like, you know, it's a beloved run. People love that run. I love that run. It's been brought back a couple times. The characters have kind of showed up in different other books in the time since that series finished. But now Runaways is officially returning with the creative team of Rainbow Rowell writing it, Chris Anker on art duties with colors by Matt Wilson. I loved this.
I
was really, really concerned because of my love for this series. I thought maybe they wouldn't nail the tone or it would hone in on things that, you know, I don't know. I just thought that I was just really worried about the voices of these characters not being matched properly.
Absolutely. This is the first post Brian K. Vaughan Runaways story that I've read that nails the voice for me.
Do you count Avengers Arena in that?
Because, you know, Chase was in Avengers Arena. Yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah, that was another good one too.
That was good.
So this one, we should say from the get-go, the only reason you would maybe not like this is if you haven't read the first series.
Yes.
Do not go, oh, I've heard good things about Runaways. I might read this, you know, new number one. It is a lousy starting point.
That's true.
It entirely relies on everything that comes before it.
Yeah. But, like, if you haven't read any Runaways stuff after the Brian K. Vaughan run, then you're sweet. I think you're still good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So this, it basically is all about one character trying to resurrect another character with the help of another character. And I can't really describe what happens in this issue without spoiling the main series, which I don't want to do.
No, it's good call. Because that is a genuine heartbreaking moment.
Absolutely. I thought the new kind of updated designs of all the characters was excellent.
Yep. Chris Anker was like a perfect person to do this job.
Definitely. And I loved kind of Nico, who is the character who basically through harming herself is able to conjure like a magic wand, and then she's able to use spells, but she can only use the same spell once and then never use it again. Mm-hmm. And I loved this further exploration of her power set in this issue. I thought it was really funny in parts. It was really tragic in parts. Yeah. I love that she conjures up a nurse at one point and gives the nurse x-ray goggles.
Yeah, like, it was such a good example of showing how her powers are both, like, limited but also limitless. Like, there's so much possibility, but then it's also getting so hard for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good progression of her character.
Yeah, definitely. So, look, I have no idea who the final villain reveal is at the end. I don't know if you do, but I don't really care. I'm on board for this series.
I
thought this is awesome. He looks like a James Bond villain.
Yeah, which is great.
Yeah, definitely.
But it looks great. The colors are great.
Yeah, this is my favorite Marvel number one in a long while, I think. And I'm not familiar with Rainbow Rowell either.
No, me neither.
Besides
but
her incredible name.
Yeah, I know. It's the perfect name for this series. I'm sold on that alone.
So yeah, definitely check out Runaways, provided you have read the initial series. And if you haven't, you should just go read it anyway, because it's one of the best books that Marvel ever put out and Brian K. Vaughan ever wrote.
Agreed.
And those are two things that have lots of good things associated with them. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some image. Oh, no, God, we've got another Marvel book.
Yeah.
God damn it, we have another Marvel book to talk about. They've been doing a bunch of these Generations books, and this week saw us do Generations the Bravest, number one, Captain Marvel and Captain Mar-Vell, in which Carol Danvers is slingshotted back in time to the time where the original Captain Mar-Vell was around and didn't have cancer. This is a character that we truly have not seen in Marvel books for a long, long while. It was written by the current Captain Marvel writer, Margaret Stoll, with art by Brent Schoonover and colours by Jordan Boyd. And I thought this was not good.
I'm struggling to have any opinion or, anything to say about this. It was...
Yeah,
I don't know much about either of these characters. I don't really care about either of them.
I don't like the way Margaret Stoll writes Captain Marvel, and I don't think she wrote Captain Mar-Vell any better than Carol.
Did they have? Are they supposed to have had romance? Carol.
No, I think they just.
Or she was his secretary. Is that what it was? I don't know.
I don't know. My Captain Marvel history is about as good as everyone else who's listening right now. Is either iterations of the character, is that like someone's favorite? I guess it is. It must be, right?
It's got to be. And people love Captain Marvel, the current version. There's the Carol core and all that stuff. So people actively love her, but I just don't get it. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, this generation series is, it is by definition completely pointless. They're just these one-shots that don't really count, don't really mean anything for the future. This one failed to be entertaining in any way for me.
Agreed.
Let's talk about something we liked instead. How about that? Image put out some new number ones this week. They both started with R. Do you want to talk about Realm or Retcon first?
I don't really care. What about Realm?
Yeah, so Realm, I guess, is the one that I'm going to stick around with for a while, even though it didn't immediately appeal to me as a book that is something that I love. But,
yeah, the first issue of this, I felt like they were setting up lots of mysteries, but I didn't care about any of the mysteries. They were trying to do world building in a non-exposition-y way, but I didn't find it compelling, so I didn't care.
Yeah, usually I like it when books do that. So it doesn't really it kind of gives you glimpses of a bunch of different stories as a way of building the world and kind of introducing you to a bunch of characters without saying every single detail about this character. But yeah, it was called The Realm. It's written by Seth M. Peck and Jeremy Horn with Nick Filardi and Thomas Maurer on art. And it is, someone described it as The Walking Dead with orcs.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is a pretty apt description, I guess. So it's like an apocalypse situation on Earth, except instead of zombies, we get a bunch of fantasy shit.
You do not like fantasy shit.
Which could be a big part of why... Look, there were part the kind of world gone to hell, and we kind of follow this... I guess the main character in this is Will, who is, a mercenary who kind of does odd jobs for different people in the world. Mm-hmm. Escort missions and that kind of thing. I found the majority of his work that he was doing in this book, in this issue, pretty interesting. But then it would cut to weird kind of vignettes about what other people are doing in this world, killing orcs or being killed by humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I actually read it a second time because a lot of people in our group really, really enjoyed it, this issue. And I was like, what was I missing? We meet a very badass kind of hunter guy who chops the orc's teeth off and puts them on a necklace or some shit. Actually, I don't know where he puts it. Hopefully we'll find out where he puts these teeth in the next issue. But then it ended. I realized the reason I didn't like it was it ends with that this main character, Will, has some weird dark demon arm power.
Yeah, I liked that one panel of the demon face. That was my favorite bit of the whole comic.
The art in this is wonderful. You know what I did not do, Siobhan?
What?
There is
me neither.
Yeah, there is a song at the end that you can have access to, inspired by this comic. you can hear a song called The River Divides by a band called Me Like Bees.
Yep, they look scary.
They look very scary.
I do like fantasy.
Not great.
But I guess the kind of fantasy I like is even more specific. Like, I don't really like sort of Dungeons and Dragons-y orcs and shit. I like some whimsical Neil Gaiman nonsense.
So that was The Realm. I'm going to give it a few more issues. It didn't appeal to me immediately, but...
I'll give it one more.
I'm sure it may at some point.
It's got some great reviews on the back.
Retcon, issue one. It was the other Image number one that came out this week. It was written by Matt Nixon with art by Toby Cypress. This was like a kind of a story about a bunch of people that have like weird powers trying to... Basically, have they been given these weird powers through like army training or something like that?
I think they've been selected for the army because they have cool powers or something.
Right. So this was, two people, one of whom can, like, take over other people and make them do his biddings. And the other one... I can't remember what the other one could do. This is a confusing comic.
Yeah, I was confused by this because I thought it was setting itself up as much more of an explicit parody of... Marvel's retconning thing, like that's how it was sold to me, and then it seemed like quite a fairly like regular people with powers, not even superheroes.
They just have powers, and so this the bulk of this issue followed like a bunch of people with powers trying to take down somebody else with powers at like an AA meeting.
Yeah, I really like the art. I really like the colors. I really like the werebear design. That was cool.
Yep, definitely.
So I'm willing to stick with this and see what it...
Yeah, most Image books deserve a couple of issues before while they find their way instead of writing things off straight away. But this wasn't as captivating as I was hoping.
Agreed.
Would you like an Image book that poked fun at the Marvel current state of like retconning stuff and doing number ones all the time? Or would that get pretty boring pretty fast?
I think it would get boring pretty fast. But if it was like funny enough, if they had funny enough creators on it, I'll read anything.
Okay. All right. Speaking of funny creators, Siobhan, did you read DC's Harley Quinn 25th anniversary special this week?
I did.
She did, everybody. She held it up to the camera as proof. Because this is a peak example of a book that you would just not read.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm glad I did.
Yeah, well, actually, one thing I didn't read was the main part of the book, which is the Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti story. I just don't like the way they write Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And I don't like that weird Deadpool character, Red Tool.
Yep, that also... Oh, is that what that is? Lame.
Yeah, yeah. And him and all his speech bubbles are different, like, hardware icons. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's really annoying. I just chose to, like, kind of ignore him.
I just ignored that entire story. So,
good call.
Ignoring was key to that first part of the book. But then the rest of the book has contributions by Paul Dini. Chip Zdarsky writes writes a story with art by Joe Quinones, who we collaborated with on Howard the Duck. David LaFuente shows up on art. And then there was another really good one. There was a whole bunch of, like, great little stories in this.
For me, the Chip Zdarsky, Joe Quinones one was the only one that... like made me understand the appeal of the character.
Sure. Yep. No, I agree with you there.
And it looked so good. Like Joker Nona's can draw the hell out of a Joker. And I really liked their costume design for Harley. I really enjoyed this whole thing.
Yeah, me too.
Actually.
I liked the Paul Dini birthday party for Harley Quinn story. It was just kind of, it was sweet. Yeah. And I loved that the payoff was that the only reason Joker had thrown a birthday party for Harley was because Poison Ivy had poisoned him.
Yeah.
And was only going to give him the antidote if she threw him a party. He threw her a party.
Mm.
But yeah, the Chip Zdarsky book is like absolutely to him just on his like comedic superhero kind of shit. And it fit really, really well.
Also,
him making a whole bunch of Batman jokes, and yeah, that was a treat having him on this section.
Also, I just noticed that on the last page of the story, it's Chip Zdarsky dressed as Garfield being led away by Renee Montoya.
What? Oh my god, you're so right. That's so funny.
I love it. That's I would love them on a Harley book. I would actually read Harley
book,
Quinn.
Really?
If they did that.
Wow.
Whoa. Huge.
Well, I mean, need I remind you that Zdarsky's doing a Spider-Man book that neither of us are reading anymore.
That's a great point, but it wasn't very good.
Did DC put out any more number ones this week? No, they didn't.
Not that I read.
But Boom put out a number one, and it was Slam the Next Jam.
Woo!
Written by Pamela Ribbon. We really enjoyed the first series of Slam that Boombox put out, about a bunch of girls in a roller derby group.
Mm-hmm.
That had fantastic art by Veronica Fish. This sees new artist Marina Julia and colors by Marissa Louise join the team. And it follows on with the same characters, but it's like the second year of their roller derby, and not all of them are able to be in the roller derby. And I think Pamela Ribbon does a bunch of really great, like, she's really great at writing relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest flaw of this book that stops me from getting into it is that she is completely unable to make roller derby seem in any way appealing to anyone. Like,
yeah,
everyone just gets the shit beat out of them, and then they get so stressed about being a part of it, and they get berated by like their other team members. Like, I don't understand why any of them do roller derby. It sounds shit.
Yeah, it sounds genuinely terrible. But I don't know. Maybe it's the endorphin rush of punching other women really hard at high speeds. That actually sounds pretty good.
Sure. It's okay because you said
it. Yeah. the main thing about this is I wish that they had a recap page, because I'd forgotten who everyone was and what their relationships were. And also, there's not a huge amount of differentiation between a couple of characters visually. And so I was like, I don't know who anyone is or what's going on.
Yep.
But I think that's more a problem with me.
All books should have recap pages anyway.
Agreed.
Even just a recap paragraph.
Yeah, come on, guys.
How long would it take an editor to put that together? Minutes.
Minutes.
I don't think I need to read any more of this. I think I'm happy just leaving it as like a series that I enjoyed, and power to this book in providing more stories for people that enjoy the world. But I think I'm good.
I think that's probably a good call.
From Titan this week, we got Wolfenstein.
Number one. See, I checked with the guys behind the camera. I was like, this is based on a video game, right? They were like, yep. And I was like, cool, I'm not reading it. Put it back on the shelf.
So you've never played a Wolfenstein game?
No,
before?
What's Wolfenstein?
Well, it started out as like one of the first person shooter games, in which you are like a dude with a gun, basically trying to take down all the Nazis who live in Castle Wolfenstein.
Oh, okay.
And in the first game, which was like a PC hit in the early 90s, you take down like a mech Hitler.
Oh, cool.
So very fun. Yeah, it was a very fun shooter when I was a kid. Since then, you know, it kind of had a big comeback courtesy of Bethesda, who are a big games company.
Mm-hmm.
They brought the kind of the Nazi tone into modern day world. And then also, and I think there's also like a future Nazi vibe going on too. So half of this book is set in like present day / the future, with these big, crazy Nazis infiltrating our world, etc., etc. The whole book was written by Dan Waters. The first half of this book, which comes after, I just said everything should have a recap page. This has like two whole pages of recap text, and I was just like,
"Oh man, no way!"
And so I dove straight into the book, and then the whole first half of the book is has art by has art by Ronaldson Friere, that was completely unnecessary, because like it's just this long, long setup when we kind of meet all these characters, and then suddenly, the only reason I stuck on it was because on the front cover, it has Peter Kowalski's name. He was the artist on the Joe Casey image book Sex. I love his art style so much. And I was like, when is he showing up? And then suddenly, like, towards the end of this exhaustingly long first story, a woman just goes like, oh, let me tell you about a story of blah, 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 blah. And then it cuts back into the past. And we see this, the main story is all about, like, almost like a comic book version of the first Wolfenstein game, of this soldier infiltrating Castle Wolfenstein, with art by Peter Kowalski. It was really, really good. I think that's all the series is going to focus on now. So hopefully we don't see any of these future characters ever again, and it's just like straight up Castle Wolfenstein bullshit.
Cool.
So yeah, I'm going to give it another issue to confirm that, and if I'm wrong, I'm going to drop it. But if it's Peter Kowalski doing Castle Wolfenstein, I'm on board.
Nice.
And also, there was a zero issue from Valiant, Ninjak.
Yep.
Written by Matt Kent, with art by Francis Portella and Andrew Dollhouse, with a whole bunch of other art from a bunch of other artists that have worked on Ninjak over the last few years. Mm-hmm. These zero issues from Valiant, all they kind of do is, give you a nice little summary before a new plot, a new storyline. Mm-hmm. And this was like a pretty cool and gory story of Ninjak taking down a hit.
Yep. I like this.
I thought that was fun.
Ninjak.
Yeah, me too.
He was a fucked up child, though. When he made that weird...
He's a fucked up child?
That bit when he made, like, killed all the birds and made a weird little sculpture out of their headless bodies.
Oh, yeah, that was weird. I mean, we all did that.
I mean, we've all been there.
The only unfortunate thing is that, it's not unfortunate. I got really excited, like, oh, cool, like Matt Kent doing this book. I think he's been the regular writer on Ninjak for the last year or so. Mm-hmm. So this is actually his, like, farewell to Ninjak. Oh. And then the next series is actually written by Christos Gage, who I don't like as much as Matt Kent. But I'm going to give that series a shot.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. Makes me want to go back and read Ninjak. Nice little...
Yeah, likewise. If you want a little history on Ninjak, definitely pick up this Ninjak Zero issue.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Did you read Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, number one?
No, I didn't.
I tried.
I didn't see that.
Oh boy, did I try. This is written by Marguerite Bennett with Christina Trujillo.
Didn't this already come out?
That was a zero issue. This is the number one. Serious issue lore states that we read both.
Well,
art was by Moritat and Dimi Macheras. Our biggest problem with that zero issue, written by the same writers, was that it was so overwritten. There was so much text. Mm-hmm. It was all self-narrated. It was so much telling rather than showing. And this comic was very guilty of that too. Mm-hmm. So I didn't make my way all the way through it, and I will not be continuing.
Nice.
Were they all the number ones you read this week?
That was it.
Well, I read a friend's zine.
Oh, cool.
My friend Tommy Dasilo wrote his first comic book.
Wow.
And he got it printed real nice.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
It's called Super Bloom. Super Bloom. And it is all about... Basically, he was in Thailand and Vietnam earlier in the year. And for a great deal of his holiday, he was alone. So he would go and eat at all these great places that a certain cool friend who hosts a comic book podcast gave him a bunch of recommendations for.
Sounds cool.
Real cool, I reckon. So he would go and eat these great meals, and then he would just kind of write comics about the food he was eating and his little adventures. So it was like, like a 20-pager.
How cute.
Of like those great kind of diary comics. With his art's really sweet and cartoony. I could totally see this coming out as like someone from Fantagraphics releasing this as like a con exclusive thing. His little insights and descriptions of food from someone who isn't, a foodie, is just someone that likes eating. I thought was really enjoyable. And I feel like everyone, when you are on holiday, even if you have like a day to yourself in another country, you do get quite meditative and reflective. And I think he nails that kind of tone really well.
Cool. Can you purchase this anywhere?
Yes, you can. I'll tell you where you can get it at tommydasilo.tumblr.com.
Oh,
that's all the details. And if you are familiar with Tommy, you'll know that he is the host of two other Planet Broadcasting podcasts, The Little Dum Dum Club and Filthy Casuals.
Cool.
Super Bloom is the name of this comic. I think Tommy did a great job with this. It's been printed really beautifully. And for someone that I think he does all these illustrations digitally, mm-hmm. I'm not sure. Maybe he's... I think what he does is he colors it all digitally. But yeah, it looks excellent. So Well done, Tommy.
Nice job.
Pick it up. I'm going to try and review a zine like every episode.
Nice. Great call.
Because I've been picking up a bunch lately. So lots of fun things to talk about. So those are all our number ones that came out last week. If you would like to discuss them with us, you can in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. Hey, Archie, what do you think about this watch?
Good.
Well, did you know that this watch is a movement watch? And movement watches were founded on the belief that style shouldn't break the bank. The watchmaker's goal is to change the way consumers think about fashion by offering high-quality minimalist products at revolutionary private prices. With over 1 million watches sold to customers in 160 countries all over the world, Movement Watches has solidified itself as the world's fastest-growing watch company. Please stop bumping Matilda on the head with the microphone. That's not very good for the listeners, Archie.
No, I'm fixing the chair.
Oh, right. It's a microphone, not a hammer. Archie, how many watches have you sold? A million?
No, six.
Six million?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're doing much better than Movement are. But if you want to help Movement sell as many watches as Archie sells his watches, how much do you sell your watches for, Archie?
7 weeks.
Seven Greeks?
No, weeks.
Oh, how much money do they cost?
$8? Yeah,
That's a bargain. But you know what else is a bargain? Movement watches just start at just $135 Australian. At a department store, you're looking
My turn.
Oh, your turn. Okay, you talk.
So, this...
Great interlude. If you go to a department store, you're looking at paying like $500 or $600. But you can get 15% off your very own, very beautiful movement watch.
Tweeted some.
I'm starting to think that maybe having you on board as a ad co-host wasn't the best idea. How about you, Tilly? What do you think? You want to get a watch?
He said yes.
Okay, good. You can get 15% off a Movement watch today with free shipping and free returns by going to the very special URL, movement.com/serious issues. The watch has a really clean design. Archie, you give me compliments about my watch all the time, right?
Yes.
Give me a compliment about my watch right now. Say, you look handsome, Daddy.
You look handsome, Daddy.
Oh, thank you so much. If you want to get a beautiful and very legitimate compliment like that, make sure you pick up a Movement watch today. That's movement.com/serious issues. Join the movement, and thank you so much to everyone at Movement for sponsoring this show and many other shows over at Planet Broadcasting. Back to you, Levins. Let's roll the dice, Siobhan, for Image, Marvel, and DC. I'm going to roll the dice right now. 1 to 2 means Image, 3 to 4 means Marvel, and 5 to 6 means DC. And rolling the dice, and we're talking about DC first.
Great.
Rolling the dice, we're going to talk about Marvel second and Image finally. So let's talk about DC first. Kick things off.
This was a big week for DC.
Called Dark Knights. Yeah, that's right. Dark Knights Metal.
Mm.
Issue number 2. Written by Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, Jonathan Glapion, and FCO Placentia on writing and art duties. Maybe we should ask someone else to tell us what's going on in this book, because we've got a special Patreon guest review from Tom Burton. If you want to be a guest reviewer, all you have to do is sign up to the appropriate support level on our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast, and you can contribute a review every week. And only sometimes will I forget to review a review out. Sorry, Tom, and everyone that wanted to hear his review of Green Arrow last week. It won't happen again, I promise. Unless it does, in which case I'll apologize even harder.
Nice.
So let's hear Tom's review of Dark Knight's Metal. He says, Metal is turning out to be quite a fun event for me. I was worried it was going to drag out the lead-up, but the issue gets everything really moving. It always brings me great amounts of pleasure to watch Batman completely wreak havoc on the Justice League. The chase of them going after Bruce in this issue is loads of fun, as he employs all his allies of the Bat family to help him avoid Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Arrow, and a bunch of others. Although the fun chase turns quite dark near the end with an absolutely fantastic looking double page spread of the Dark Batman, comics don't usually creep me out, but the darkness of this story is genuinely scary to me at points. I do have to say, I think Batmanium is one of the dumbest sounding names I've ever heard. That was the name of a metal that they find, which I thought was wonderful, actually. I'm really looking forward to the rest of this issue and hopefully more baby Darkseid. It will be super fun if we see Batman fighting through the dark multiverse with him. Also, I thought it was really interesting to see that Snyder links the origins of this event to the return of Bruce Wayne, which further makes me wonder what history of comics, if it's of DC Comics, is still canon after Rebirth.
Mm.
I love this issue, though, and I can't wait to read how Batman can stop this incredible dark power.
Nice. Well,
so this is the big, crazy event that Snyder and Gekapulo have reunited to do. It is all about the dark side of the DC universe and how all the different metals in the DC universe are linked to this dark side and how Batman is like the thing that kind of anchors all these things together. It is a celebration of everything in the DC universe, and it is like this on drugs adventure that every page you turn and something more crazy and stupid happens with like callbacks to things, parts of the DC universe we haven't seen in a while.
It's so hilarious. This is such a hilarious book.
Absolutely ridiculous. I really enjoy it. I totally understand why this would not be for everyone, because it is like, it just beats you over the head with like DC references and like characters turning up to 100, mm-hmm. you know, and just being way crazier than they are usually.
Has Baby Darkseid appeared before ever? Were we all just supposed to accept that Batman has a baby version of Darkseid in a bag with him? Bad parenting.
So the final thing that Geoff Johns did with Justice League was the Darkseid War, and apparently Darkseid dies and is now a baby. Because you know that's very what happens hilarious. When someone dies.
That's very hilarious. I'm on board.
So he's a pretty cute little baby as far as, you know, totally evil babies go.
Yeah.
I loved when Superman realizes that Batman is not Batman and rather Clayface and just punches through Batman's heart.
Yeah, that was...
Like, surely just saying, hey, I know you're Clayface. It would be way less aggressive.
But it's way funnier to punch through his heart and be like, I got you, everyone. Yeah, I love this.
I think Dream from the Sandman is completely unnecessary at this point, so I'm looking forward to them using him for you know, any particular good reason.
Yeah.
But I love that the Court of Owls had a big role to play in this. Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool too. And yeah, I mean, all these ridiculous dark versions of Batman that we have, like, they weren't just happy just to have, like, let's just have a bunch of evil Batman. It's like, this is the evil version of Batman if he was Wonder Woman. Yeah. This is the evil version of Batman if he was the Flash. So all the Justice League versions of Batman, and they're evil. And then, to top it all off, there's a Joker version of the Batman.
And Doomsday.
That's right. So it's completely insane.
I like female Aquawoman.
Yes, definitely.
Batman.
Backwoman.
Yeah, God. So many levels. And, like, the scary little Robins.
Yeah, which the Joker version of Batman has on, like, a chain. And they're, like, hyenas that can eat people.
Like, I don't really understand what's happening in this book, but I'm enjoying it.
I kind of think that's the point. It's like this big, silly rock opera.
Yeah, they're just, like, they're having so much fun. Like, even just little moments, like, when you realize that they're in the wrong tomb and the correct name of the tomb crushes the incorrect name. That was funny.
Yep. Excellent. Good moments. Very funny. Who knows where this event is going?
Yeah.
I just hope it just stays as stupid as this.
Same.
Because that's super appealing to me. Also through DC this week, we had Action Comics number 987, in which the mysterious Dr. Oz's identity is finally revealed.
I read this.
This is written by Dan Juergens, with art by someone that we lost from the new Superman, but he's moved over to regular Superman in Action Comics, Victor Bogdanovich. I really love his art style a lot, so it was cool to see him show up on this.
Yeah, I think it works.
I thought as an issue, this was not very good. And I've really enjoyed this, what Action Comics has been in the last year. In fact, I think I came to like it more than Superman, but I thought this was a lot of setup, which I guess that would be as it should be expected, because I think a lot of people who haven't been reading Action Comics would have come on just for this reveal, because everyone got tricked into thinking it was going to be a Watchmen character.
It's not, guys. I thought that was a bad reveal too. I was not impressed by that reveal.
Yeah, so skip forward 30 seconds if you don't want to know who Dr. Oz is, but to be honest, who cares? Just stay listening. It's Jor-El.
Yeah.
It is Superman's father, who has mysteriously escaped death when Krypton exploded.
And has half Oh, no, he's missing an eye. I was going to be like, he has half a robot face or something, but no, missing an eye.
Yeah, one of those things. Yeah. they just tick a box.
Yeah.
And this is like, this reminds me of like having an evil Captain America.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just like, oh, I don't care about this story.
Yeah, yeah, I really don't.
But at the same time, I like that it's not someone from The Watchmen.
That is funny. I like that.
So, yeah, I hope that they go somewhere good with this, but I don't see how.
Agreed.
Also, it's probably not going to be Jor-El.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It's probably going to be some weird clone, like the rocket that that transported Superman to Earth decided
becomes
to
sentient.
Take on the form of his father. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's a great call. I think you should place bets.
Mr. Miracle, number 2 of 12, came out this week, written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerrards. This is all, a kind of Vision-esque story of featuring Kirby's creation, Mr. Miracle. That's slightly more grounded than considerably more grounded. Mm. Actually, in some ways, not really, though.
Mm.
It still is like a big, wacky space adventure, but they have real human emotions and problems alongside that.
Lame.
Lame? You don't like that shit?
That's okay.
This was like comic book crack to me. This is everything I want in a comic book.
Yeah, there was a lot that I really enjoyed about this. There were a couple of parts where I found Mitch. Is it Gerrards or Gerrards? Or do you just
not Gerrards?
Right? Gerrards. I found his art slightly unclear.
Sure.
And like the constant 9-panel pages is I guess it's fine. I don't know.
I love the 9 panels because the pacing, especially like the comedic pacing it's able to provide by sticking to that, you really read it like a screenplay. I really enjoy that aspect of it.
Mm.
I guess, I mean, I loved it when they did it on Sheriff of Babylon too. So I think it's, if this is how these two creators are going to work together, I think that's cool.
I loved all the granny goodness stuff. That was excellent.
We were actually just complaining last week about how we wanted more granny goodness.
Yep.
And then we see an incredible, I loved all the insight into how these characters were raised.
Mm-hmm.
On Apocalypse by granny goodness, and how, she is one of the most despicable characters in the DC universe, but this book makes you kind of like her and feel for her in a weird way.
Yep.
So when she gets like hammered in the face by Big Bartha at the end, you're like, fuck, is she dead? I really, really like this. Like, I think if you think back to like the Vision, we weren't 100% on board with all of the potentially confusing parts of that book when it started. And then by the time, issue 5, whatever, came around and things started to fit into place, we were like, oh my God, this is a really, really amazing book. And for me to be enjoying this as much as I am now, I think this is going to be a very strong 12 issues.
I think you're probably right. I think I don't know. I don't know why it's not 100% appealing to me right at this moment, but I'm on board for the long haul.
Okay.
Long term.
She's on board, everybody. That's as good as we're going to get.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Did you read Detective Comics this week?
I did. I love Clayface.
Detective Comics number 964. What's that?
I love Clayface. I love this version of Clayface.
Clayface is great too. I thought this issue was paced very differently. It was a lot slower and a bit of a chore to get through than the other issues. And then I realized it was co-written by Christopher Sabella, who I think falls in the Steve Orlando, Marguerite Bennett camp of overriding things and making me not enjoy them as much. But James Tynion the IV was on board with this one too, and we had a new artist by the name of Carmen Carnero, with colours by the brilliantly named Ulysses Areola.
Great name.
Favourite name in comics.
Incredible name.
And the better parts of this issue dealt with Clayface dealing with, you know, his problems that come with being an enormous man made of clay and the fact that he's a monster. But,
it sounds silly when you put
really,
it like that.
Really, sort of war comics, to be honest. But there's some really weird panels in this issue. Could I divert your attention to around page 8 or 9 or so? It's page 8, where we have Batman suddenly appear out of nowhere and stand between Spoiler and Anarchy.
Oh my god, yeah, that was so weird. Why did that happen?
They're talking, they make out, and then she pushes Anarchy away, and then all of a sudden Batman is between them. Yeah. He hasn't been in the issue until this point. Okay, cool. And then let's skip forward about 8 pages to where on the left you have a fight between Anarchy and Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Batman says, Tell her or I'll make you tell her to Anarchy. And then Anarchy says, the first victim, is that the story you want? Gladly. And then out of nowhere, it just says clonk and Batman's head is coiling back. I don't know what's clonked him?
I mean, it's either Anarchy's staff or Anarchy's head, I think.
But Anarchy's just kind of standing there looking at him. I'm concerned about how easily clonked Batman was.
And then Batman kicks and Anarchy jumps up. And then they're just all standing there discussing, and Spoiler's standing there guys, stop fighting. It's weird.
Yeah, very. I don't know if that's because the writing was confusing to kind of convey into art, or I don't know.
And there's a mobile between them, a child's mobile. Is that supposed to be lights? I don't know.
Lying, Reed. Yeah. But yeah, please, if you have a theory on what clonked Batman, was it Anarchy's Anarchy stick? What is that? This has a button on it. It's a pretty dumb weapon. and there's a net in it. One end is a net and the other end is electricity.
It's Anarchy.
Anarchy.
Nets and electricity.
But I do have to praise the use of the onomatopoeic word clonk.
Yeah, that's good.
K-L-O-N-K-K. I'm going to name this episode after that great word.
Nice. Oh, glad to hear it.
No, I didn't get to read many other DC books this week. I did read Suicide Squad issue number 25. So this is the extra size anniversary issue of Suicide Squad, and it's finally done it. It is no longer interesting to me anymore.
Wow.
It is just too stupid. All of the everyone just quips relentlessly, and the action is dumb, and the story is really, really dumb. And that appealed to me for 24 issues, and now I've done it. It's jumped the king shark. So I think I'm going to drop Suicide Squad.
Wow.
But hey, look, I made it 25 issues, which is more than anyone thought I would.
That's really impressive.
And also, I'm probably going to pick up 26 because I'm an idiot.
Suicide Squad showed up in 2 other books that I read this week.
Yep.
So it showed up in New Superman.
Yep.
Which has a new story arc called Equilibrium. But it doesn't really feel like a new story arc because I'm pretty sure it just follows on from exactly what was happening in the last issue, where
Suicide Squad showed up at the end.
Yep. And then I'm gonna really struggle to explain what's going on in this. There's his master who's fighting an evil version of himself or something, and it's to do with yin and yang. And then there's a bit that references Death of Superman. and we continue to see all the weird stuff with Kong Keenan's parents. I like this book, though. It's good fun.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great book. I haven't dropped this. I just didn't get around to reading it. As I said earlier, it was a massive week.
It really was.
Too many books.
Too many books. They also
showed
up...
the Suicide Squad.
...in Teen Titans, which was a... The only reason I read it is because it's a Dark Knights Metal tie-in. And
right.
I have a lot of time on
it. Was it essential reading?
No, goodness no. But I actually quite enjoyed it. It was written by Benjamin Percy with art by Mirka Andolfo. Good. And it's to do with, like, you know how that mountain thing has sprung up in Gotham because of Dark Knight's metal? Gotham's like a mountain now or something. And there's like these rings around it and it's like a labyrinth. And the outermost labyrinth is like a maze run by the Riddler. And Robin teams up with Green Arrow and Killer Croc and Harley Quinn to get through the maze. And it was kind of fun. It was pretty good.
Is it a Titans book or a Teen Titans book?
Oh, it's a Teen Titans book, but the Teen Titans only are in it for like one page. And then it's just all Damian Wayne.
That's so funny. I might try and read this. That sounds fun and weird.
Yeah, and at the last page, Nightwing shows up, and the story is continued in Nightwing, issue 29.
I also didn't get around to reading Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, I did read that.
Or Wonder Woman.
I did.
Should I read either?
No, it was like Hal hallucinating his dad and talking about how great being a pilot is. It was pretty lame.
Boring.
At
least on brand, because Hal Jordan... Is his character is boring.
He sure is.
It's his main trait. It's his superpower.
Did you read Wonder Woman?
No. This is the final issue written by the Feeling creative team before James Robinson takes over.
Right. Well, that's how it felt.
I started this and I was... Was it, sorry?
It felt like the last issue of a filler.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it, Shea Fontana? I thought she was pretty good in, like, you know, across these few issues.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty good and all fine.
Yep.
Like, sure
you. I reckon she wasn't able to do much because it's all about the next issue of Wonder Woman is going to be the follow up to the Darkseid War Part One of Children of the Gods. Fun.
Sounds fun.
Or not fun. We'll find out soon. So those are our DC reviews. We're going to move over to Marvel for the second issue of Venomverse, written by, which sounds like an evil German villain would say. Venomverse. or it sounds like a cured meat.
Yeah.
I'll have a slice of Venomverse. Like Venomversed. Anyway, I'll stop.
That's good. Good Venomverse.
Because those jokes...
Banter.
Those jokes are way worse than this issue, but this issue was also pretty bad.
Yeah.
Colin Bunn, Ivan Coelho, and Matt Yaki on this book, which is all about a bunch of different other world Venoms teaming up against these anti-Venom characters. Like,
fuck. This book is one of those ones where it's so hard to explain that by the time you've like finished explaining it, you're like, what's the point? It's not that good. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. Should we leave it at that? I know people are enjoying it. I'm just going to say it's not for me, and maybe I should just not read any more issues so I stop complaining about it.
Maybe. I can understand why this would appeal to people in the same way that like a team of obscure Batman appeals to us. Alternate universe
Batman.
Exactly. Seeing like a Venom version of Rocket Raccoon is not like, I just don't care about that.
Well, no, see, the Venom versions of all the characters, that does appeal to me. It's the story of them having to fight like
negative
a bunch of like kind
Venoms.
Of like, yeah, and then they also take on the what like other Marvel characters like costumes and
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I just don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. Uncanny Avengers this week. Issue number 27, the horniest comic that Marvel's putting out right now.
It continues. The horniness continues.
Yep. This saw them kind of take on like a really pointless bad guy in Gravitron, which I thought was like funny. I don't know. This is a good example where Venomverse is like pretty pointless, but doesn't appeal to me. this is pointless and appeals to me. I don't, and yeah. I can't tell you like what it does. I think it just, I think it's just so fun.
It really is fun, and the like, art's really nice, and it's got that like I think real soap opera.
That's right. If Venomverse didn't take itself so seriously, I'd probably enjoy it.
Yeah,
but it is very, very serious for something so stupid.
Absolutely.
What do you think about Scarlet Witch and what's his name, Dr. Voodoo?
Just do it already, guys.
Yeah, they're real horny for each other.
They really are.
And Rogue's like main power set now is just making out.
I feel like that's back to the roots of the character. I like it a lot.
Hell yeah. Everyone, if you are someone that really laments the fact that Fantastic Four are nowhere to be seen in Marvel Comics at the moment, start reading this, because someone shows up at the end of this issue and says, "My name is Harris Hutchley, barrister at law. I'm here to discuss the legacy of the Fantastic Four."
Woo!
So that's cool. That that's gonna cool. be cool. I reckon that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, and absolutely. Cool. And the next issue.
And those are two things I love about comic books.
The teaser for the next issue says the boys are back in town, and it's got Beast and Wonder Man fighting some.
When have they ever been known as the boys?
I don't know, but I'm into it. All right, they look so happy. They look like best friends. I'm on board.
That's right. Yeah, Beast and Wonder Man, officially the boys. Man, if we get a comic from Marvel Chris called The Boys, like if Garth Ennis is okay with that,
yeah.
And it's just Beast and Wonder Man. Just like smiling intently and punching people. That sounds like comic of the year to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I would read that.
So I mentioned it when we did a little intro earlier. There was the last issue of a very underrated series that Marvel has been putting out.
That's what you were talking about.
Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer's Supreme, issue number 12, written by... What's wrong?
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, what a good issue.
What a good issue. I was just saying, what? Yeah. Robbie Thompson and art by Nathan Stockman with colors by Jim Campbell. Creative team just doing incredible work on this issue, which is to be read entirely horizontally. Mm-hmm. So you hold the comic like a calendar, mm-hmm. and turn the pages up. It was just in doing that, it was so clever and made the comic so much more cinematic.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done so many clever things with this series in terms of how you read the physical comic, which makes it super worthwhile to pick up in single and just a, like an engaging, enjoyable experience to read. And it looks incredible.
Definitely.
The colours are so nice.
Yes. What I loved is that this is like, it's less about Doctor Strange, but more about the legacy of and how the Sorcerer Supreme come to be in mm-hmm. the first place.
Yeah,
and the whole thing kind of goes full circle. It was a really, really fun book. It was charming. Introduced a whole bunch of new characters that I hope we get to see again at some point. Had some good Strange action.
Yeah, and absolutely like wrapped up really nicely.
Definitely. Yeah, it was a really, really great book.
Mm.
I was umming and ahhing about Robbie Thompson as a writer, because I think Silk went off the rails of last year at some point.
Yeah.
But I think with this, I'm now just gonna I'll intently follow everything he does because I think he's got the goods.
Good value.
I'm reading Deadpool now.
Oh yeah.
Deadpool issue 36, written by Jerry Duggan, with art by Matteo Lolli. And this is just like Deadpool, because like I know you don't read it, but surely you've been paying attention. You know that he got married, he has a child, he had his own like team. He was an Avenger. It's been quite a ride for Deadpool for these last couple of years, I don't think any character in Marvel Universe had their world quite rocked as upside down as Deadpool did. Because he basically killed Phil Coulson,
mm-hmm.
and now everyone fucking hates him. His family has disowned him. He is no longer an Avenger, and so now he is just like going on the like he's basically a mercenary again. He's avoiding contact with all friends, and it's a real, real sad boy Deadpool time now.
Oh, sad boy Deadpool.
But it's really cool. It's a good book. I mean, everyone said as much, and. I did read that initial Marvel Now run, like the first six issues, and I was like, well, maybe this isn't for me. But yeah, I keep saying I'm going to go back and read it all, and I promise you at some point I will. But even if I don't, I'm really enjoying where this series is now.
Nice.
Yeah. Deadpool was also a kind of main character in the latest issue of Secret Warriors, which was the team book of all Inhuman characters that we weren't sure would exist after Secret Empire, but it absolutely is. This sees Daisy Johnson finding out about the death of Phil Coulson and the fact that Deadpool did it, and so she puts a hit on herself in the hope that Deadpool will show up to kill her, so she can kill him. But instead, Taskmaster shows up, and this is a very entertaining and fun book, and in a different direction to what I thought it would go in.
Yep, I really enjoyed the life model decoy, naked Dum Dum Dugan in her shower, because there are a couple of elements to that. There was no need for him to be nude.
Yep. They just said, yep, S.H.I.E.L.D. was weird. That's the explanation as to why he's anatomically correct.
That's good.
But I love that this is a team book, even though they're not really a team.
Yeah.
So it just kind of follows all their lives separately post-Secret Empire. And you know they're going to come back together at some point. But it's really entertaining, even if they don't.
Absolutely. And this includes great book, one of my fave Marvel villains, Dark Beast.
Oh, yeah. Except I love that people call him Dark Beast.
Yeah.
Just, it's such a weird...
He'd be like, my name's just Beast. I'm just dark in comparison.
That's right. Written by Matthew Rosenberg and Juan and Ramirez on art. This is a great book and a really, really fun example of Inhumans being done right.
Agreed.
Don't believe the hype, even though the television show may suck, apparently. There's lots of good comics featuring Inhumans at the moment.
I read something that I'm pretty sure you didn't, which was The Amazing Spider-Man issue 32.
Guess what, motherfucker? I read it. I did it because I saw who the creative team
was. Yeah, there you go. I thought I was going to be like, and you're going to be so mad that you didn't, but then you did. Fine.
This was written by Dan Slott. Big whoop, I know. But the art on this book is by Greg Smallwood, who we love so much on Moon Knight.
Absolutely.
And Jordi Belair on colors. And it's a one-shot that you don't need to have been reading the last few years of Amazing Spider-Man at all to fully grasp. It is all about the Green Goblin, about Harry Osborn. Norman Osborn. Losing his connection to the Goblin and traveling to the same place that Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom, and Baron Mordo traveled to in the search to get the magical wisdom that he needs to reconnect with the Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
It was fantastic. What this an was issue! Such a good issue,
man. Like this, just like every now and again, Dan Slott reminds you of why he has been writing The Amazing Spider-Man for over 10 years now. Because there's certain elements of the character in the world that he just nails, and I'm so excited to see where this goes now. And this was such an incredible issue just by itself. For Spider-Man fans who haven't maybe read Spider-Man in a while, this was such a worthwhile issue to pick up. Such good fun.
Yeah, with incredible art by Smallwood and Belair.
Oh my goodness.
They're a great team.
They really are.
The pairing of them together is as good to me as Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair when they do art together.
Absolutely.
This is a really, really cool special issue. If you're a Norman Osborn fan, I was going to say if you're a Spider-Man fan, then realize he's not really even in this. But definitely just pick this up. It's a great issue. And maybe if you're just someone that loved Slott's run and then kind of fell out of love with it, this will remind you why he is so great on a Spidey book.
He's good at villains.
Yeah, he really is. This is an excellent, excellent issue. One of my favorites of the week. You don't read Defenders, do you?
No.
Written by Brian Bendis with art by David Marquez. This is really fun because they're really building up a fun little world of characters that interact with the Defenders, and it's kind of in line with the Marvel shows, the Netflix shows, but without being gross. It's like Punisher shows up for two issues, and Diamondback's in it as kind of the main big bad. Then you have Black Cat, and something horrible happens to her, which I hope doesn't actually happen. You even have little cameos from Damon Hellstrom, who I love.
I love Damon Hellstrom.
Because he's got a romantic background with, I feel like, every female character in the Marvel Universe. I didn't know he dated Jessica Jones at some point, but apparently they did.
We've got to add him to our list of horny Marvel characters.
Definitely. Definitely a Randy boy. I think Marquez on art duties on this is reason enough to give it a shot. But it is Bendis doing good Bendis, balancing a lot of characters that he loves at Marvel and having a bit more focus in a story. I'm enjoying this.
Nice.
What else from Marvel did
you
read?
Have you stopped reading Hulk?
I was going to. Then I saw that this picture, the front cover, like I was going to keep reading it, and then I saw the front cover is the Hulk clutching at a like a donut, like smushing a donut with her hands, and I was like, oh man, give up this weird foodie thing. I hate it.
No, now there's an evil Hulk cook guy or something. I don't know.
Okay,
it just wrapped that story arc up. That's fine. It was fine. I'm going to keep
was
reading
it. Was it fine?
No, it was okay.
I thought this series showed so much promise, and now I like, if I can't even like, I don't even want to, like, I get each issue, and it takes a lot to, for me to go, like, okay, now it's time to read this. Like, I just didn't even get around to it this week.
Yeah. But. It's definitely not at the top of my list, but I'm going to, it's a new story arc next issue. I'm going to keep giving it a go. Why not?
What hope, like, hopeless millennial bullshit do you hope She-Hulk engages with? In the next arc.
I hope that she gets some kind of subscription box, but she doesn't like any of the things in it.
Like a loot crate?
Yeah, yeah. she gets a loot
There's
crate.
There's like a Hulk crate.
Did you read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl?
I didn't get around to it. I've got that. That's going to be my bedtime reading. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, my review of that, I would love to praise that as often as I can, but I know my review of that is always going to be, oh, I love this so much. It was wonderful.
It's so good.
But
it's
like,
so
you
funny.
Know. There's such a timelessness to these books that you can just read them whenever you want.
Yeah, totally. It does kind of exist outside of continuity.
That's what makes it so good.
Yeah. But man, Dinosaur Ultron is good fun.
That's so amazing. That's great. Are they still with the Latverian exchange students?
Yes, yeah, Stefan.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's good.
So lots of good Doom jokes?
Lots of good Doom jokes. Yeah, like Antonio the Doombot is hilarious. Continues to be excellent.
Oh man, I would love a book called Antonio the Doombot.
Yeah,
ongoing.
Totally. And like Erica Henderson, like she's so amazing. Her work on Squirrel Girl is incredible, and I don't need to say that. But in this issue, Doreen gets a new costume, like a Savage Land costume. So it's like a little torn up like bikini, and the way that she draws Squirrel Girl's body, I appreciate so much, because she has like a little torso, like it's not sexualized. She looks like a gymnast.
Right.
And
that's awesome.
It's super fun. Like she's got abs. It looks cool. Like this is such a great book for kids as well as everyone you know ever.
Yeah, this is the book that I keep all the singles of, because I can't wait to read them with my kids at some point.
Yeah.
It's such a good introduction to comics and Marvel.
Yeah, and it's just good fun.
You know what was surprisingly excellent this week?
What?
Was Star Wars issue 36.
Whoa.
Written by Jason Aaron with art by Salvador LaRocca. As predicted when I talked about it last week, this was going to be a pretty good LaRocca issue, because it was all about droids and stormtroopers with very little bad photo referencey faces, because everyone was either a robot or had a mask on. But this entire issue was like basically about how much of a badass R2-D2 is. He basically goes on a rescue mission on his own, steals an X-Wing, and boards a Star Destroyer and takes out like squadron after squadron of stormtroopers trying to find C-3PO just by like doing like funny tricks and beeping and bawping all over the place. And then he rescues C-3PO, and like the whole time he's doing this, you know, this solo mission that he embarked on ages ago, it feels like. The whole time he's doing this mission, we get this narration of basically it's like almost like a voiceover telling us about the model of droid that R2-D2 is, the astromech droid, and it kind of saying all the things that an astromech droid can and can't do, and as it says he can't do them, R2-D2 is doing them. So it was really, really
cute.
Fun and great, and like I think this is the penultimate issue of Jason Aaron's Star Wars run, which has been patchy over the last year, but I think every now and then had an issue that made me glad I didn't drop it. And this was definitely one of them. A real fun one. Did you read any other Marvel books this week?
Nope, that was it for me.
All right, let's talk about Image.
Woo!
Let's just gush about a bunch of books that were very, very good.
Yay.
This week. Do you want to talk about Kill or Be Killed or Spy Seal first? Because they were like two of my absolute favorites this week.
Yeah, I mean, Kill or Be Killed is consistently my favorite comic every single time it comes out, and like this issue continued to like just continues. It's so, so good. It's so different to everything else on the shelves. It's so sophisticated. God, I love everything about this book.
Totally. Like, and I just think it, like, no one writes a ridiculously flawed character like Ed Brubaker.
Absolutely. And just, like, watching Dylan's descent and, like, being a party to his sort of becoming this monster is so compelling.
Absolutely. It's crazy because Ed Brubaker wrote for Marvel for years, and, like, it's really funny to think that, you know, everyone remembers him for Captain America, but beyond that, he didn't do that much grounded stuff. Like, he did a long X-Men run, which just seems like such a mismatch for his writing style. But I remember quite enjoying it at the time. But it's crazy to me that he never did Punisher, because this is definitely crazy. Like, you know, an alternate universe kind of take on the Punisher, in a way. Obviously, it's a lot more nuanced and you know, personal than that. But this is a wonderful book. And Sean Phillips and Elizabeth Breitwiser doing beautiful, beautiful stuff on such an ugly, ugly story.
Absolutely. Agreed.
And we're now, like, you know, we are rapidly approaching this just being a full-on action comic as well, which is very exciting.
Yeah, it's like the pacing of this series is so good. I look forward to rereading this as a whole, because it's getting so exciting every month.
And it really challenges you to kind of root for the main character as well. Like, it's like, you know that he sucks, but he's
That moment, it's great. Like, when you see that he's made the decision to kill the guy at the end, whatever, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like fine. That, I mean, it's called Kill or Be Killed. Yeah, that you're not spoiling anyone by letting you know that a guy gets killed.
But that moment was really like, oh man, like sinking in your gut kind of feel.
Well, yeah, you really, we keep seeing his killer instinct just kind of take over and all these cold-blooded murders happening.
Absolutely.
It's real gruesome. I love it. Mm-hmm. Spy Seal this week.
I think
I loved issue one.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, this was like 10 steps up.
This is such a good issue. Right? I think I might be like I have romantic feelings about Spy Seal. I want to date Spy Seal. This is my favorite. Such a good comic.
And that's Siobhan's son getting very, very upset upon finding out that his mother has feelings for a spy seal.
I'm leaving his dad for a comic book.
This is written and drawn by Rich Tomasso. Like a Tintin-esque kind of book. It's extremely explicit in its Tintin references. It's about Britain's slickest secret agent, who is a seal.
The Tintin references, even just in like his clothes, are extremely explicit. Like the funny little curly shoes that he wears, that seems very Tintin to me. But there's so much to enjoy.
Where I love that Tintin was a very straight adventure book, this will suddenly just throw you a bunch of absurd stuff.
Yeah.
And he has like a really horny dream sequence, which I loved as well. he's quite a horny dude.
Yeah, he really is. There's a lot of like sexy birds. All the women seem to be birds in this.
But yeah, the adventure kind of action stuff, the sequences are so great. The car chase sequence in which his car suddenly turns into a motorbike.
That panel where it pops off is like, that was my panel of the week. And like, I keep noticing more Tintin references. And I assume that they're intentional. Like, he goes to the Hotel Tapioca. There was a General Tapioca in Tintin. So on and so forth.
It's 100% like, you know, purposeful.
But it's like, it's so beautiful as well. Like, the scenery of this kind of adventure spy series is so good. All of, like, the clothes are so good. The colours are incredible.
Wonderful flat colours. It's so great.
I love it.
I love that he gets, like, a secret message from a mouse who's hiding, who's, like, fully clothed, but lying fake dead in a mouse trap with a letter in his mouth.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of gets out of the mouse trap and, like, tells Spy Seal the new mission goals.
And then
goes around the corner, like, not even around the corner, like just outside the door, and there's a little motorbike, and then flies off into the sky in his motorbike with a big pink whoosh. It's so wonderful. It's just,
it brings up so many questions about this world. Like, if mice are people, then how are mouse traps legal to sell?
Totally. And then there's a really, up in the air kind of mystery at the end concerning our main character, which I can't wait for them to address in the next issue.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's
like we have an imposter on our hands.
Good.
It's a beautiful, beautiful book. I will say one complaint. There was a backup in the first issue that was really cute about a different animal. like a ninja or something.
It was an owl. A ninja owl.
That's right.
It was very cute.
There's no backup material at all this issue, which was disappointing, but still it was a brilliant comic.
It really was. I had to save Spy Seal for last because I knew it was going to be my favorite thing and that nothing would make me as happy as it did. And I was correct.
Yeah, I'm so dumb. I always just... I get on the train after picking up my comics from King's and then all I want to do is read all the ones I'm excited for. I never pace myself. I don't want to have a train ride reading crap comics. I also read Black Science issue number 31 by Rick Remender, Mateo Scalera and Marino D'Anicio.
How'd that go?
This is them coming back after a little hiatus and just throwing everything we've seen at the series so far at our main characters. So much bananas shit. Like there's magic, there's superheroes, there's science, there's like the main character has given away his intellect to get out of a deal. But he, in doing that, he hasn't given away his education. So he's still smart. He's just not a genius. I just think that's such a clever kind of beat and such a weird thing that, yeah. I really, really loved this book in that, like, you know, the first five pages, like, oh, wait, what's going on in this comic again? And then you quickly catch up and it's fine. I read Winnebago Graveyard number 4. This is the mini series by Steve Niles and Allison Sampson, and basically about a family who stumbles upon like a cult while driving through America in a Winnebago, there is a graveyard of empty Winnebagos from all the families that this cult have eaten, and there's all kinds of weird beasts. And I thought this is a very, very simple horror comic. I can understand why people might not enjoy it whatsoever, but it was almost like reading like a fable or like, you know, where it's just
cautionary
like very
tale.
Like, you know, that's right. It was a very much a cautionary tale where nothing is really learnt at the end, but you know, and people die gruesomely and
don't leave your phone in the car.
Exactly. And I never will again. And finally, I read the second issue of Mage, The Hero Denied, the Matt Wagner book, which returned last month, and I still have not caught up on all the earlier stuff in Mage, and I think that's fine. I'm not lost at any point in this comic, which is all about what's his name, Kevin Matchstick, the reborn Arthur Pendragon, who can ignite anything he touches with the mystic power of the legendary weapon Excalibur. And I think what is great about this is that it's set in the 90s, and because Matt Wagner is a, you know, quite of his time kind of creator. And I think it's set in the 90s anyway, because otherwise it's very weird that his kid reads an Animorphs book and watches Rocco's Modern Life, because that's what happens in this book. But it's like, you know, all the fashion choices are very 90s, and I think it suits the vibe very well. And there's an excellent action scene at the very end where he ignites two hubcaps that he rips off a car with the power of Excalibur.
Oh, that's pretty fun.
Cool stuff.
Cool.
He wields them like two big discs. Real cool stuff.
Well, I read two Image books that sounds like you didn't read.
Uh-oh. What did I forget?
Redlands, issue 2.
Oh, I didn't get this.
Damn it, King's
Comics. I really didn't show up in my pile. Wow. I would have read this immediately. This would have been a sit down on the train, read it straight away.
Absolutely.
This is written by Jordi Belair.
Yep.
With art by Vanessa Del Rey.
And colours by Clayton Cowles. Or Coles? Yep. No, he's the letterer and production. Sorry. This was a great issue. It continues to be excellent. Oh, Jordi Belair does the colors as well as writing it. These are some complicated lead characters in terms of their like morality and motivations, and I really love it. These are some spooky witches. Spooky,
fantastic.
Not 100% good witches. I like it. I like it a lot.
Which is how witches should be.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to spoil it too much, but yeah, real good. Really enjoyed it.
Okay.
I also read...
That's going to be one that I have to steal off you.
Sacred Creatures.
Can you keep it at your house?
Yeah. Sacred Creatures, issue 3. That weird one about... with the giant bald cats and... they're like, it's the Seven Deadly Sins.
I forgot about that comic. How was it?
It's pretty hilarious. I still like it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. We got a little bit of, like, mostly backstory to the lead character... the guy whose life has been ruined by these people coming into his life, and we learn a little bit more about the the bad guys themselves, and who this priest bro is, and it's good. It's good, silly fun.
The best kind of fun.
Absolutely.
So those are our views of Image, which leaves us with the other publishers section to get through. And a couple of my favorite books this week were by other publishers. And we're going to kick things off with Mech Cadet U, issue number 2 by Greg Pak, Takeshi Miyazawa, and Triona Farrell. This is a book about a young boy in a world where every year these big, giant, sentient mechs come to Earth and choose a human child to be their pilot. And in the first issue, instead of going to the daughter of like an army general, a mech chooses the young janitor. It's an unbelievably sweet kind of ode to like, I guess, would you say it's an ode to like, you know, classic kind of 80s anime?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely, you know, I don't know that much about mech series. What's the big one? What's the really popular one? Shinji? No, not Robotech, but similar vibe.
Yeah. I love this. This is so, so good.
Yeah, it's super fun. It's really sweet. I like it a lot. I like
I love
as well.
That's right. The bully?
Yeah, the bully, but also like the kid who names his robot Thunder Wrecker.
That's right.
And is really just anxious because that everyone likes it. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, it's really, really great, and I love that, like, even though he's fully a part of, like, this, you know, junior army that has mechs now, he still wears his janitorial belt.
Yeah, and hat.
As a tribute to where he's come from. Yeah, it's really great. And I love, you know, Greg Pak writes a great bully.
Yep.
Has done in many superhero comics before, and I love the bully in this is a great character who, you know, a lot of depth is going to come through with in the future. But also what's coming through in the future is war.
Yeah.
This adorable little boy and his adorable robot are going to have to go into war very soon.
Heavy. So
what's going to happen, Siobhan? I'm scared.
Death, probably.
Great book. Everyone should be reading this one. It's excellent. Did you pick up the first issue of The Shadow that Cy Spurrier wrote?
No, I didn't.
Are you just missing out on this one? Oh, damn, it's a real shame because you would really enjoy this. The Shadow, Out Through Dynamite, written by Cy Spurrier, written with art by Dan Waters. This is like about the, you know, the classic pulp hero of The Shadow, who has been missing for years and potentially shows up as a burns victim in a hospital ward. And it's up to his nurse to kind of help jog his memories using whatever resources she has access to. It's really great. It's really creepy. It modernizes the character really, really well by not modernizing the character, just its setting.
Mm-hmm.
Cy Spurrier is able to do a lot of dark humor without it being kind of gross and off-putting. I think it's a really, really great book, and Dan Waters' art on this, it suits the tone of the book really well too.
Nice,
good one, Dynamite.
Doing
a good show.
Did you read another Dynamite book, Sovereigns issue 5?
I've dropped this series because I just can't make sense of it. It's all over the place.
Yeah. I had no idea what was going on in this issue, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was like it was a really good sort of commentary on retconning, and then at the end of it, it looks like it's going to lead into a slightly retcon team or something, or it was explaining why these characters are different now. It was really clever. I really enjoyed it.
Wow, what a callback. The retcon book that we wanted.
Exactly. I was going to make that point, and then I forgot to. But I also really love the Dr. Spectre backup that's going across all these Sovereigns
books. That's why I
picked
it up. Yep. All right, cool. Because I think we're going to eventually get a Dr. Spectre book.
I hope
so. And it's
going
to follow on from all these little backups. No, we are. It's been announced. It's coming out.
Well, excellent. Good.
Quite soon.
Because it's great. His housemate is Frankenstein. Frankenstein's monster, sorry. Not Frankenstein.
Oh, really? Yeah, a lot of Frankenstein going on right now.
A lot of Frankenstein's happening in the comics at the moment.
Did you read Grass Kings issue number 7
by
Matt Kint and Tyler Jenkins out through Boom? The first thing I want to say about this issue is that Tyler Jenkins only gets better and better.
Yes.
This issue in particular, I guess because it was like mostly outside in the daytime,
mm-hmm.
his watercolors really like literally shone
in
the sunshine.
Beautiful.
But this is now becoming less of a kind of like us against them book about the kind of gated community versus the outside world, and more of a mystery, murder mystery, but like a very old murder mystery about a serial killer who may be in the Grass Kingdom. I thought it was awesome. This is a great issue.
Yeah, really good fun. Enjoyed it a lot. I mean, like, not fun. So it's just, like, compelling. And...
Oh, I mean, compared to the other... Compared to the other issues, it was fun.
Yeah, yeah.
This wasn't as gruesome as the other ones have been. We return to the world of Ghost Money in issue 2 of 10 of Ghost Money. Terry Smolderin and Dominic Bertale. This was one of my favorite books the week that the first issue came out, mm-hmm. Out through Lion Forge in their Magnetic Collection imprint. There's kind of two main plots going on here. One of them is about the Lady of Dubai, who is someone who is, she's not really a public figure, but she's a billionaire who has kind of, she's a ghost in a way. She's able to travel wherever she wants and has so much money at her disposal. She meets somebody, a woman who falls in love with her as she whisks her away to different parts of the globe.
Mm.
And we learn that she's been asked to become part of this new kind of collective of powerful people in the Middle East. And meanwhile, while that's going on, some Americans in the CIA have targeted her because they've flagged this organization that she's been invited to be a part of as a potential terrorist threat.
Mm.
And so we basically spend half of it this issue focusing on either group.
And then we see how they come together series. At the end. Good fun.
Yeah. Oh my god, there is a panel, a car crash panel.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end when a little bomb goes off and a car goes flying. And all the black ink just completely vanishes from the page. Mm-hmm. And it's this beautiful kind of swirl of white and purple and pink.
Yep.
I thought that was so effective in kind of portraying the insanity of a sudden car crash like that.
Yep. And this is the only comic that I'm reading that has footnotes. But it's such intelligent... Totally. Not that having footnotes automatically makes it be intelligent, but it's it's such near future sci-fi that it's making some really harsh critiques of America's presence in the Middle East and things like that, that it's very compelling, and I feel like I learn something a little bit when I read it, even though it's sort of sci-fi.
Yeah, well, it has some footnotes that are based in fact.
Yeah.
And then it will have footnotes for things happening in the year 2020 and stuff like that. So that only aid the history related to this book.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, really great. Really cool.
Really good.
So, yeah, man. And I found out that this is not being released digitally. So the only way to pick it up at this point, with this translation of it anyway, is through the single issue. So by all means, try and track it down. It's a really, really cool and unique series.
King's Comics, get it.
Proof that Lion Forge are doing good stuff.
Absolutely.
It's available at King's. I read one more comic this week, and I will not be reading the third issue of it. It was the second issue of Dead of Winter, written by Kyle Starks, Gabo, and Crank.
Gabo.
Gabo, or Gabo, G-A-B-O. Oh. I feel like Gabo is two B's. Mm. Right?
I don't know.
Gabo. Did you ever get called a Gabo in high school, Siobhan?
Not in high school, but in primary school, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, right.
Children are mean.
Yeah, that's right. It's very true. Let's raise our children to be angels.
Absolutely.
This is a kind of zombie comedy that...
Oh.
Yeah, it falls flat quite a lot in this book. I think the jokes are actually pretty good, and the writing isn't too bad, but the art is very, very simplistic. And it's based on a card game. So it doesn't really have much right to be that good in the first place. Mm. So well done, Dead of Winter. I read two of you, but I will not be reading any more.
Nice.
You got any more for us, Shinbo?
I read a trade paperback, but I will save that review for our bonus episodes. But it's called Taproot.
Give us some sizzle.
Good.
Yeah, I've got Taproot on my stack too. Yeah. The stack of trades next to my bed right now. Is so big that I could just throw a tablecloth over it and it could be my second bedside table.
Lovely. Well, this is about a queer gardener who falls in love with a ghost because he can also see ghosts. It's lovely. It's a genuinely
beautiful,
lovely
incredible
book. Can't wait for you to read
it. That's out through Lion Forge as well, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it is. Yeah, look forward to next week where hopefully my children will not be sick and I'll be able to spend a couple more hours over at the Shinbone residence. And we can review some trades.
Maybe my baby Patreon can listeners. Throw up on you.
Oh, wow. You get thrown up on today.
Constantly. I'm just constantly covered
in. Yep.
Baby bomb. It's delightful.
Hopefully we can get an on-mic Chuck in the future.
That would be great.
Thank you so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you want to discuss any of the comics that you heard us talk about today, you can do so in any number of ways. Mm-hmm. Easiest thing to do is join our Facebook group, which is now over 2,000 members.
Whoa.
On facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast. Or you can just find our regular page, which is facebook.com/Serious Issues Podcast, and drop us a line there. We are on Twitter at @serious_issues, or individually at SiobhanCBG and at Levdog, LevDawg, on both Twitter and Instagram. You can also send us an email, seriousissues@kingscomics.com. And again, a reminder that all of the comics that we reviewed on the show are available at King's Comics, which you can find in Sydney, 310 Pitt Street, or online at kingscomics.com. Siobhan, I wish you a wonderful week of ample free time and many comics for you to read.
I wish you the same, and well, and healthy children.
Yeah, but one of my Matilda is on steroids,
so she's gonna get
that,
jacked.
That to get, yeah, she's gonna get way more ripped than I am right now. thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and is about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.